Blog Talk Radio.
Pollution we never address. Now, if you are to look at finding a solution to what is really very disturbing, that there are still 2 billion people in the world that really are not food secure. So you're talking about people who...
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
In my mind,
he was born in Guyana, Port Morant, deep in rural Guyana, played 43 tests, and certainly did a wonderful job. In fact, in 7 centuries, and in terms of perhaps the best would have been that 133 he made at Lord's in 1963, and his highest 209 came against England 3 years later in Nottingham. Of course, we want to pay our respects we've got already his son on the line. We can find them wherever they are. Basil Butcher Jr., who actually is a regular listener to the program, and we couldn't do this without speaking to the veteran Red Spurrier. Hello to you, Basil. Nice to have you on Mason and Guests. How are you?
Good night, Andrew. Thank you for having me on your show.
Right.
Good evening to all your listeners.
Right. And of course, Red Spurrier there in the Helen of the West, St. Lucia. Hello, Red. How are you?
Yes, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to Basil Jr. I hope that you're standing strong. You have a great father, a man who gave thousands of people a lot of pleasure, and I think you could be very, very proud of his contribution.
Yeah, following on from where Reza left off, of course, you would have been very proud of your father, Basil.
Yes, I echo what Reza said. I thank Red for the sentiment. Yes, it was interesting growing up that, you know, I knew my father played for the West Indies and so on. And it is when I moved to the United States and meeting people from all over the Caribbean, from the cricketing world, and then they would hear who my father is, and they would be so enamored that that's when it really hit me, mm-hmm, of the impact that he had all over the world to many, you know. So it's until I came to the United States, I really understood that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing an interview, darling.
Yes. Basil, he was ailing for some time now, I understand.
Yes. You know, he had suffered. He had diabetes, and he had suffered some strokes that caused him to suffer from what is called vascular dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And a combination of those two, his health deteriorated. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was painful in the last several months to see a man who was elite, world-class athlete,
mm-hmm,
could barely help himself in some of the basic functions of life.
Mm-hmm. And he would have left Guyana and joined the family in the States. Am I right about that?
Well, my parents continued to live in Guyana, but they would come to U.S. like, you know, in the summers,
okay,
and then they would return,
mm-hmm,
when the place started to get cold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm doing an interview.
Yes. Reds?
Hello?
Yeah, Reds, I mean, you're very much on air. We're hearing you saying that you're on the phone, Reds. who are you speaking in the back, huh? Are you talking to your big Doberman there, Reds? Is he giving you trouble?
I'm talking to my dear wife, who also wants my attention.
Oh! All right, Rez.
Okay.
I like that one, Rez. Rez, some memories of Basil Butcher.
Well, I think we should give the background. I mean, he was a product of the Clyde Walcott program when the Booker's owners of the Sugar Estates brought him to Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
And he started this program of developing the infrastructure in the sugar estates, and then began a lot more competitions among the sugar estates, who basically in the area of Barbies and other areas, the players never got a chance to really come to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
They would hardly make trials. But the work of Walcott and Robert Christiani
mm-hmm,
ensured that the board could not ignore all of a sudden this talent from Port Moran to the Kanhai, Solomon Butcher, and of course later Kali Churan.
Mm-hmm.
Fedris came from another estate called Blaymont. But it was that program that really brought them into British Guyana cricket and then eventually West Indies cricket.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
My lasting memory would be some of the intercolonial centuries he scored. He had tremendous battles with the strong Barbados team in October of each year. This was before, of course, the Shell She started. And my lasting memory would be the 133 that he scored at Lord's, a brilliant innings.
Right.
Under pressure in more ways than one, because we were losing, we had lost a lot of wickets. And he told me in an interview, say this with the Sun listing, that he had received the bad news from his wife,
mm-hmm,
that she lost the baby and childbirth.
Oh, dear.
I don't know if he will support what I'm saying, but this is what he told me. And in the middle of that, reading the telegram,
mm-hmm,
someone said, "Butch, it's you." It meant that he had to go out and bat, and walked out in front of a huge, large Lord's crowd,
mm-hmm,
I had to deal with that and then deal with the responsibility of going in and trying to rescue the ship. And Andrew, all you were listening, it was a brilliant 133. Brilliant. I have a call from Bombay today. They're doing a special piece in a Bombay newspaper, a Mumbai newspaper. And he said he had just spoken to a couple of Indian players, and he was highly ranked in playing the Indian spin of Kopi, et cetera, at that time. I think the one little moment that probably he regretted, that he didn't go to Australia in 60-61 and didn't play in 62. So after gaining status in 59 and doing fairly well in India in 59, he had a bad series, if you can call it that way, but he explained to me that the top order was making a lot of runs, and Jerry Alexander would say, "Butch, I want you to go in and play shots, not going in and killing innings." And he sacrificed his innings, and eventually, in trying to push things on, he would get out for a fairly average score. And then, you know, he didn't go to Australia.
Basil, memories of your father?
I mean, earlier today, you had asked me about some of the things that he meant to Wesley's cricket.
Right.
And something some people may not know, that in 1965, Kenny Wishart, who Reds would know about, he had a great, seemed like he had a great fondness for my dad, and he sent him to represent the Guyana board at the West Indies board meeting.
Right.
And part of the discussion was the upcoming tour to England in 1966. And at that time, West Indies were then dubbed the unofficial world champion, having just beaten Australia in the West Indies. And so he said he raised the issue that being world champion, the West Indies players should be the highest paid players. They should be getting paid more than the English players whom they were going to play against. And the Barbadian representative got up and said to Jeffrey Stallmeyer, who was the president at the time, "Jeffrey, is what Basil is saying correct?" And so, long story short, the West Indies players going to England in 1966 were paid more than their English counterparts.
Oh, really?
Yes. And when he got back to Guyana, Alan Ray, who was representing Jamaica, called Kenny Wishart to say, it's the first time Guyana ever had representative at the board meeting. The other thing, too, is after he retired, and Reds could tell you also about that, he continued to play our what we call Case Cup, which was the first division cricket.
Right.
And many of the players who played against him would say, just being on the field with Butcher was cricket development for them, teaching them. And one of the things he always did was after the day's play, he would sit down and talk cricket.
Okay.
You know, he always would say to me, he learned 99% of his cricket in the dressing room. Like he told me a story of his first trial match. Clyde Walker comes out to bat with him, and he says, "I'm a country boy." And Clyde Walker played the ball and nodded to say yes. Well, he said, "I'm a country boy. I know about yes or no." And he stood up, ran up Clyde Walker. he said he thought his career had ended before it started. And he said, when they come at the end of the day's play, Kenny Wishart, Barclay Gaskin, Clifford McQuaid, Clyde Walker, they would be in the dressing room discussing the cricket. And he remembered Clifford McQuaid saying, "We got some country boys here that don't know how to run singles." And he knew who he was talking about. And he said that when, as you know the term, when puppy turned dog, he reminded Clifford McQuaid of that statement. And McQuaid said, "You remember that? You remember that?" And he said, "Yes." You know, and in terms of my fond memories, as a father, he was very strict. He stressed to us growing up, we must be independent. He always had this saying to us that is what you put in, you get out. You know, he wasn't a guy that would tell us to our face, you did well. I remember playing on the 19 trials for my region. I made 8-1. I came home and I tell him, my dad, I made 8-1. And he said, Skipper, you got to make 100, right? He would always use, he would use cricketing terms when he talked to us.
Yeah.
And he said, Skipper, you got to make 100. So I used to go with him to trial matches, the Shell Shield trial matches at Border. And I walk in with him that day. And Milton Paidana says, young Butch, I hear you make runs.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to myself, this was not in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
How Paidana know about this?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Paidana, how you know I made runs? He said, your father come in there bragging but his son make runs.
haven't told you that you had to make hundreds.
100. And then I tell another story about another guy who played Case Cup with him.
Yes.
He was a left-arm seamer named Godfrey Edwards.
Yes.
Swing the ball both ways. And Clive was West Indies captain at the time. And my father told Clive, I want you to come and see this guy that bowls like Garfield Sobers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So on that day, Edwards had his worst day. So Clive in the front seat with my father driving and Edwards in the back seat. And Clive turned to my father and said, Butch, I ain't see this Sobers bowler you're telling me about. When Edwards told me the story, I said he did it with everybody. He wouldn't tell everybody that you know, in the face, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me too, he was like my cricket professor. I would always be picking his brain.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed watching cricket with him and picking his brain. I remember the first time he ever saw Chanderpaul bat,
right,
in 1994 against a play for the President's 11 against England,
right,
at Border. Chanderpaul made up of 5 runs, and he didn't play no fancy shot as we would think. And as me and my father walking out of Border, he turned to me and said, that guy Chanderpaul is a damn good batsman. So I look at him puzzled. I said, Daddy, that guy barely make 5 runs. What are you talking about? He said, no, Skipper, I saw a ball slowed up on Chanderpaul, and he was in a good position and played the ball. And that is a mark of a good batsman.
Mm-hmm.
And I chalked that up in my memory.
Yeah.
You know.
And the rest is history as far as Chanderpaul is concerned.
Exactly.
So your father was right.
He was right on the money.
Right.
Another thing he also said, batting with Sorgari,
yes,
was the task of batting was easiest when batting with Sorgari, you know. And Red talked about Gupti. I'll just say this one story. My father in his first test match facing Gupti, and he's struggling. And Barclay Gaskin was the manager. And when he came in for lunch, Barclay Gaskin said to him, Butch, I see you struggling. But remember the principle, when in doubt, push out.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to make a half century.
Wonderful story. Basil Jr., well, you've got his name, but of course he's got Bajan roots, you know, because his father's Bajan.
Yes.
Related to Matt Fingal and Roland Butcher as well.
Correct.
So he's a half Bajan.
Yes. I remember a Bajan guy when my father was the speaker at a function in New York.
Right.
And he said there was this couple in Barbados, they named Butcher, that lived downstairs. He lived downstairs from them.
Right.
And they all used to say, Basil Butcher is their son.
Oh. But Reds, how good a batsman was Basil Butcher in your view, Reds?
I think he was a class batsman. I mean, I've always said, might have said this to you, that both himself and Seymour Nurse were underrated.
Underrated, okay.
Underrated. Didn't get the due recognition to me from the international writers. But you see, in those days, Andrew, we were not playing a lot of test cricket.
I see.
The opportunities to really advance your aggregate, advance your scores, was all available. I mean, in 63, we beat England, much like the rest of them, had a good series. We did not play Australia until January of 85.
Oh, dear.
January of 65.
Right.
We played no cricket in 64. And those kind of things operated against maybe all players.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you see the average of nurse and butcher there in the 40s, mm-hmm. which is quite healthy these
right.
days when you look at, mm-hmm. at the present West Indies.
Oh, yes, the average in 25.
But, I think that butcher had his own style, yet he was very orthodox.
Mm.
But he had a way of, when he picked up the bat, he made
a wheel.
Tremendous circle with the bat.
Yes, okay.
And yet he came down in time. It was a special butcher type of way of batting.
Mm-hmm.
But four-legged, he was attacking, played a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he wasn't a bad leg spinner either.
No, okay.
Maybe on the balls of both British Guyana and the West Indies. I think he got a fiver.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that Barbados connection is strong because quite recently mm-hmm. you and I were in St. Kitts
right.
I was actually talking to Roland
Butcher. Yep, indeed, about him as well. Yes, I remember that.
About him. It's so relevant now. And in fact, I'm very glad that somehow or the other that conversation
mm-hmm.
came up.
Right.
And it appears that the Bajan Butcher connection have been fairly in contact with
mm-hmm.
the Guyana Butchers, and I think they have a degree of proudness
mm-hmm.
about the way he played and the way he did. He was a West Indies selector. He was a president of the Guyana Board for a short while, and certainly made a contribution.
Red, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Basil, just before you go, well,
okay.
he died in the States. I understand he's going to be buried in Guyana. Am I right about that?
Yes. We're going to take his body home, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I see.
Because he gave particular instructions
mm-hmm.
That he wants to be laid to rest on next to the tomb of his father in
mm-hmm.
Port Moran.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And cremated as well?
Yeah, he wants to be cremated, yes.
Oh, okay. And a big
yeah.
family, what, seven children, I understand?
Yes, I have six siblings,
mm-hmm.
Four brothers and two sisters.
Right.
My dad had three children before he was married, and with his wife, Valerie Butcher, it's four of us.
Right, okay.
I'm the eldest. Yes.
Well, Basil, just before you go, what part of the States are you?
I live in New Jersey.
Oh, you're in New
Jersey.
Okay,
yes,
New Jersey.
Yes.
And
yes,
I understand
yes.
you're a regular listener to the show.
Oh, yes, I listen to your show all the time. It is one of the few shows, I think, that are probably the only show that you can get such an in-depth look at West Indies cricket, local and international. So I've always been a keen follower of the game since I was a child,
mm-hmm.
And your radio program affords me to continue to follow West Indies cricket at that level. I just wanted to say one quick thing.
Sure.
Once my father showed off on me, because you know I was a student of his career, and I would look up everything. And one day he showed me a picture. He said, "I bet you for this one."
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the Queen came to Guyana in 1966 for the independence celebration,
mm-hmm.
her husband, Prince Philip, being a very keen cricket follower,
mm-hmm.
he said he had to come to see this place called Port Moran
mm-hmm.
that produced these three cricketers, Butcher, Solomon, and Kanai.
Mm-hmm.
And the Queen and Prince Philip made a special helicopter trip. And there's a picture with my father in his full West Indies blazer greeting them after they came out the helicopter. So he said, I got one on you. You did not know about this one.
Wonderful.
I said, no, I didn't know about this.
Wonderful. Memories of Basil Butcher. And, of course, here on Listening Guests, we had to pay our respects.
Yeah.
Basil Butcher Jr., I want to thank you and enjoy the rest
okay.
of your evening.
Thank you very much.
All right. There you have it. Of course, we had to do that. Listeners, Basil Butcher, some fond memories, and it's always good to have Joseph Redspear, who's there listening on the event in St. Lucia. Of course, we're going to be talking very much in relation to West Indies. We had a big victory, Dr. Porter's with me, against India. What a victory, Hetmar. He's been under the cost, really, under the gun. He came very, very good, tremendous knock. And of course, his partner in that little cricket crime was Shea Hope. They batted beautifully, and Dr. Porter, it was a wonderful victory.
Yes, good night, Andrew, and also to the listeners. First, I'd like to extend my condolences to Basil Butcher's family and all his other loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a good win for the West Indian team, you know, overhauling 287 with 2.2 overs and a ball to spare, contrasting hundreds from the youngsters, Hetmyer and Hope, you know, showing the strength of the top order when they apply themselves and come through, and that ability to hit boundaries and the love of the chase, which is what we definitely prefer to do. And for once, Kohli didn't dominate, and I think Kohli not coming off in that match helped us a great deal, even though the youngsters, Plant and Iyer, had big half centuries. And the fast bowling was pretty good. Cottrell and Holder to a lesser extent. They were all under six and over, along with Kimo Paul, and that made a big difference in containing the possible score. And the fielding was pretty decent as well, in the field. So all in all, a good performance by the West Indies, and I think India would be stung by that, and they'll be coming hard at us, so it's a matter of us trying to...
What about this Indian bowling, though? I mean,
well, the wicket was pretty benign. It didn't offer a lot for either pace or spin. So I guess that's why they didn't look as threatening as we would have expected. But certainly Kuldeep was the best of them, and he turned the ball, and Hope wasn't able to pick him at all, and he proved to be a big handful. So it shows what a quality spinner can do on a wicket that isn't offering a lot of assistance.
All right, let's go to Trinidad and Tobago, which is a hot spot, of course. We got Tony Gray, who's a big Christmas shopper, I'm told, in Fazia Mohammed, whose barber went to the bank, Fazia, with a million dollars, Fazia. I mean, what are you doing there with that barber, man? Hello, Fazia.
Hairdressers and barbers and so on make a lot of money in Trinidad.
For $1 million for there?
It's not surprising, because a lot of people don't trust the bank with their money, especially because of the exorbitant charges.
Oh, yes. We know that here in Barbados, too.
And there are certain suspicious transactions, no doubt about it, but it's not entirely surprising that if you're a successful barber with many different outlets, it's quite possible you could have $1 million stashed away illegally somewhere.
Well, Tony Gray, who's not a barber will never ever be one. How are you, Tony? How are you, my friend?
I'm all right, Andrew. Good evening to you, and good evening to your listeners.
Now, talk to me about this West Indies victory, tremendous victory against India. Were you shocked by this, Tony?
Somewhat. I thought that our batsmen did very well, obviously, and you know. The way that they went about batting, I was surprised with Hetmyer, for example. He's sat along a lot now. His deportment is obviously different. He has black hair to begin with.
I know with interest, yes.
Yeah, but 139 in 106 deliveries, excellent performance by him. He was calm and cool throughout, and that has a lot to do with, you know, the other batsman at the other end, Shea Hope, and the way he went about things, you know. We criticize Shea Hope for his slow scoring rate, but you have to understand that he's very intelligent. He knows who he's batting with, and he was the right foil for Hetmyer.
Fazer, you're taking it. Were you shocked as well?
Not so much shocked as surprised in the same way that Tony pointed out. Supposedly, if you wanted to go as far as being shocked, it would be the fact that the West Indies won so comfortably to chase down 200 and almost 290,
right,
and to win by 8 wickets with more than 2 overs to spare in conditions that many were surprised that Pollard had actually chosen to bat second in the conditions on our wearing pitch, a sticky pitch, as it turned out. I think that would have been the shock element, because you almost always expect that the West Indies, because they've been losing more than winning for so long, that at some point that there will be a stutter that, if it's not fatal, will be so bad that it will take the gloss off the victory, that they'll be scrambling and scraping to pull off a victory. In this case, they cruise to the target, and I think that was the most surprising and most impressive aspect of their performance on Sunday.
Fazer, what did you think about our fielding and bowling effort against India?
It still needs a lot of work. I think when you look at it, because remember, we're now counting down towards 2023, and it's good to see that Tyrone Pollard, is showing faith in someone like a Hayden Walsh Jr.
Mm-hmm.
and giving a lot of the other bowlers their opportunities. And even if it's a helpful pitch like it was for this match in Chennai, you still have to do the work. You still have to bowl a consistent line and length. And when under pressure, you see things sort of falling away a bit towards the end. The sensation that maybe the wheels are coming off at a certain point. But it's about being under pressure. I think it's a very good thing for our bowlers to be facing up to this sort of challenge, whether you're talking about someone like a Sheldon Cottrell, who is continuing to impress, and as I mentioned, some of the other younger bowlers who have been given opportunities, maybe Carrie Pierre might feature in a couple of the one days as well. We'll have to wait and see. I think it's good to see them facing up to the pressure of a powerful Indian batting lineup and really responding. Sometimes they'll succeed, other times they might struggle, but in the end, you want to see them really improving consistently. As far as the fielding, it's not always as sharp as you'd like to see. There were a number of errors during the matches against Afghanistan. There were errors in the field in the T20s. So I think the West Indies have quite a bit of work to do to polish so many aspects of the game. It's a work in progress, as we say so very often, Doc. But I think the encouragement of that result, we really need to see the West Indies kick on and be even better in the second match tomorrow.
Mm. Hi, Tony. In the last few one-day internationals, Rawson Chase has outperformed Hayden Walsh. Do you have an explanation for that? And also, do you think Hayden Walsh is being, you know, managed in the appropriate way?
Yeah, well, you have to put things in the right perspective, first of all. India is one of the best sides as it pertains to batting against spin. Obviously, their batsmen have grown up on slow turners, and they've played against a number of spin bowlers, different types of spin bowlers, so they're very adept at playing spin. So Hayden Walsh, on his first real tour, I mean, he played against Afghanistan, but India is a different side, obviously. Collectively, the best team in the world, I think. And in their conditions, they know how to bat against spin. So you have to put things in right perspective, first of all, and you know that he's going to get some challenges against top-class batsmen. When you look at Chase is a bowler that a lot of people don't look at seriously. Eh? They think that he is, you know, just a makeshift spinner, but he gets wickets. He gets consistently wickets in different formats of the game because he's intelligent. He has a subtle variation, and he's consistent and doesn't try to overdo things. He doesn't try too many things. So he's very disciplined in his approach, and he's adept at playing in any surface, really, and that's why he gets wickets. So, you know, I'm not so surprised that Chase will outbowl Hayden Walsh, you know, and Chase is obviously more experienced.
Mm. But no. the leg break bowler is going to go for more runs, but has to be attacking and trust his variations. My difficulty is that he hasn't been able to really bowl his quota, and you know, looking at his confidence and also the confidence of the recent addition to Brandon King, the way they've been used, I think that thus far in the tour, neither of them, Walsh to a great extent, but I don't think that either of the two of them have got the confidence from being on the tour that we would have liked after such a good tournament in the CPL.
Fazeer, that one is for you.
Yeah, well, I think the good thing about it is that they are being given opportunities. And when you see someone like Hayden Walsh, and you made an important point there, Doc, about the fact that when you talk about wrist spinners, they are attacking bowlers by nature. And because of the very nature of the craft, they will bowl the odd bad ball. And as Tony mentioned, you're talking about top-class batsmen in their own conditions, and they're going to capitalize. But I think what will really matter is whether or not the players are getting down on themselves. So are they being really buoyed by the team structure, by the players around them? I get the sense that Karen Pollard is keen to give everyone an opportunity to prove their worth. That is why you might say, well, why throw Hayden Walsh Jr. into the fire so early in a spell against India's top batsmen? Well, I think that's a show of confidence, whether it's a T20 match or a one-day match. And if it is that he's beaten out of the attack, it really comes down to the captain and the other senior players to let that player know, whether it be a Hayden Walsh or anybody else for that matter, that this is not about you getting down on yourself and maybe things haven't worked out today. If you believe you, we trust you, we think you've got the take, and it really is about getting greater exposure. So much of this game, as with any other sport, It's about belief. And if you believe that nobody wants you around in the squad, your body language will start to deteriorate. If you feel that never mind what happens, your team and your captain and your coach believe in you, that makes a world of difference.
Mm. Now, let's talk team selection now. Tony Gray, we won. But would you consider making any changes for the match that starts at, 4 o'clock tomorrow morning, Eastern Caribbean time? Or would you play the same side, Tony?
I would play the same side. I think that, obviously, the same side would be Boyd. You know, you look at Kemo Paul, I look at Alzari Joseph, Cottrell, they all bowl well.
Mm. What about Jason Holder? Ian Bishop seems to have a little bit of concern of Jason.
I think that he doesn't have the confidence at the moment. Jason Holder has to adjust his mindset. He has to play the one-day games and the T20 games like if he's playing a test match scenario. He got wickets against India here in the Caribbean, and because he ran in and bowled at his fastest best, right? I'm saying the fastest best because when he really tries to get wickets and bowl faster, he seems to be a lot more consistent. But to me, technically, he's going too wide of the stump.
Okay.
You look at the best fast bowlers in the world, and they get closer to the stump, so their perception of where they want to pitch the ball is better. Could be Ambrose. You could go back in time to people like Courtney Walsh, the late Malcolm Marshall. They all got close to the stump.
Tony Gray as well.
Well, all right, thank you. You're not saying that he doesn't need the variation and you know, change the angle a bit sometimes going wide of the stumps, but to me, he cannot complete his action consistently. Mm. And his strength really lies on using the new ball and moving it away from the right-hander. So, you know, I'm not sure that the coaches have analyzed that part of his technique, getting closer to the stump and using that big body. Because it's very difficult as a man at 6'6 to complete consistently his action against a right-handed batsman if you don't get close to the stump.
Mm-hmm. Now, Fazer, would you make any changes?
I suppose I would be tempted to go with the same team. The only issue would be with the conditions because, again, from this distance, we don't fully appreciate what the conditions will be in Vishakhapatnam for this second match because if it turns out to be a bit of a green top with something to encourage the faster bowlers, you might want to ensure that you do have those fast bowling resources. But if it's bone dry and cracked, you might want to consider a bit of a change as well. Also, the only temptation in the batting lineup might be Brandon Singh, personnel Ambrose, but again, I get the sense that the team ethos seems to be one of giving players an opportunity, not just simply picking you for one match and discarding you immediately after that. And especially having won, as Tony Gray mentioned, it might be the ideal situation to stay with your winning combination. But again, if it is that you've got a horses for courses situation where you need to make changes based on what you're seeing with the pitch and other conditions, then I'm sure they're mature enough to accept those.
Fazek, can we win this series?
I think we've got a very good chance. I didn't expect us to win a single match.
Really?
I've gone on record saying that we would lose this series 3-0. Because having lost 2-1 in the T20s, I fully expected India to come back to the West Indies with a vengeance to ensure that they impose their dominance on the West Indies.
Fazer, can I interrupt you? Can I interrupt you, Fazer? India playing its strongest team?
Sorry?
Is India playing its strongest team?
No, they're not.
Okay.
Because remember, they've got a number of players who are injured. Hardik Pandya is not there. Jasprit Bumrah is not there. They're dithering with their lineup a bit because they are like we should be. And I hope we are in the same position of building towards the 2023 World Cup. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the West Indies have beaten the Indians emphatically.
I
don't want us to go away with the idea that the only reason the West Indies won is because India are not at full strength. India are playing at home.
Right.
We've got Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, and so many others. So, yes, they may not be exactly 100%. They may be dropping catches and whatever else that's happening in the field. But I think India are still a formidable team, and I'm really pleased to see with the way the West Indies are performing of late.
Tony, are we going to beat India? Talk to me, Tony.
We can beat them. We can beat them because I am looking at the stability of the team. I think that the team is a lot more stable now. You look at the demeanors of, you know, Pollard and Simmons. Simmons is a lot cooler than he used to be as a batsman when we played together. He seemed to have this father figure type association with his players, and that's why he's getting the best out of them. The other thing that you have to be mindful of is that the fact that we played against Afghanistan, so it was a perfect prelude in India
mm-hmm.
Against a team that has a lot of spin bowlers, will test us somewhat. And we had a lot of cricket before we got to India, and that's why we performed this well against them in the first game. But it's not to say that they're not going to come back harder. They're going to come back harder. It's up to us to be a lot more consistent
mm-hmm.
and look at the strategy that we used in this first one-day game and try to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
We made a mistake in the T20s, in the second, the third T20, in that we went back to Jason Holder with a new ball and he was not bowling well.
Mm.
We had Harry Pierre in the second T20 opening the bowling with Cottrell, and that seemed to work. So we have to maintain what we've been successful with strategically.
Mm. No, further, is it a masterstroke to have Pollard as captain?
Well, it's turning out to be that way so far. But again, these are very early days, and we know how things go. Because you can become the flavor of the month in next to no time, like Sammy was,
yes.
when he was captain of the West Indies early on, and then things started to go downhill.
Mm.
But I think the most important thing is what Kyron Pollard brings to the environment is that he's not put off by whatever goes on, whatever people say about him, or whatever people write about him, whatever the media might say, whatever the opponents might say. Because he's been there and he's done that in the most high-profile environment, which is the IPL. He's a senior man with the Mumbai Indians. He's part of their leadership structure. When you've played in that environment and you've traveled the world in a senior role, even if it is T20 franchise cricket, it makes you a bit more worldwide, a bit more mature. And I think what he's done is brought that maturity to his leadership of the team. So it almost doesn't matter whether he delivers with bat or ball, although you would like him to do at a much better level because his overall numbers in one-day cricket are very ordinary. I think what he's bringing is that level of calmness around his players. When you have your captain looking very assured about things, even when things are going awry, it helps to calm the players down rather than to see them all flustered and panicky and arms going left and right. And I think that's what he brings to the team. Whether it's a masterstroke, you'll probably only be able to tell in a couple of years' time.
Now, gentlemen, let's turn to the big news of the week. Dwayne Bravo, he wants to come back and play for the West Indies. First of all, let's go to you, Tony Gray. Do you agree with that? Would you bring back good old Dwayne Bravo?
Well, in a T20 scenario, of course, because of his past experience, he's played a lot of T20 cricket all over the world. And, we need that experience with the young team. Obviously, he's going to be looking for the World Cup in October next year. So I think it's a good thing once he's fit and he's ready to go. We must not pick him based on what he's been able to achieve alone, but must pick him based on his fitness and his performances of late. So we have to judge him on that. But I think that Dwayne Bravo, if he's fit, he can be a superb contributor to the West Indies team for that World Cup.
Now, interesting, we're going to try and touch base with old Trace a little later on. He does a wonderful sports commentary in Jamaica. It's very popular on the evening news. And he has an interesting article in the Gleam. It says, Skerrick's geriatric plan. Now, and he went on to make some very interesting statements. It says, Skerrick's plan, which is clearly not a vision, unsophisticated and simplistic from the moment he stepped into the office, trying to undo everything that was done by his predecessor, Dave Cameron. How do you respond to that, Fazir?
Well, first of all, we have to understand what Oriel Tracy is all about. It's about entertainment. So you know what Oriel gives you, and you recognize that for that fact. But if that were true, then you would have seen wholesale changes to the West Indies one-day team for the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, many people argued that there weren't enough changes for the World Cup, and that Kerrick and company had promised much but were delivering very little. So in the case of Dwayne Bravo, we obviously are going to go down the road of parochialism, because I'm going to concur with what my former primary schoolmate said about endorsing Dwayne Bravo, and endorsing particularly the point that Bravo shouldn't be picked just because he is Dwayne Bravo and because of his record, but because he's fit and performing.
Mm.
He's got to show, like everybody else, that he deserves an opportunity to play for the West Indies, or else from Rothman Powell to take his place.
Mm.
As far as making the changes and being like Ricky and being vengeful about what would have done by Cameron, you've got to live up to what you promised. It's the same when people go up for an election. You have your manifesto, and if you've got certain points in your manifesto, talking about West Indies cricket first, talking about changing the way Cameron would have done things, and you've gone into office and then continued business as normal, then you're not living up to your promises. So whether it's an Oral Tracy or anybody else being upset with what Chariot and Company do, the fact is, are they living by their word or are they going against what they would have said previously? And unfortunately, Andrew, this will have to be my...
Yes, I know. Okay, well, President,
obligations.
Right, we want to thank you very much indeed. We also want to thank Tony Gray. Tony, quick question. Are you doing Christmas shopping, Tony?
Yeah, I'm doing not just Christmas shopping, but Christmas painting too.
Oh, painting. That big house there in Santa Cruz, I understand you've got an $8 million house. And we're not talking GD dollars, you know.
Don't say that too hard because there's a lot of crime in Santa Cruz.
And all the best and happy Christmas to you. Always a great pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, so there you have it. We're going to move quickly. We heard from Basil Batur, of course, Julian Red Spirit, Tony Gray, and Fazer Muhammad. We hope to join, of course, Ian Bradshaw as well. And we also talked to Oral Tracy, but of course, in the studios, just coming from his Christmas shopping is a man who's just joined us in the studios. We'll certainly, what are you smirking at? But we'll talk to him after the break. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends.
Oh, my brother, it's going to be a lonely Christmas without brother Leonard, Kim, Hector. November 2002, a day to remember, and to the lost a distinguished man, Leonard Kim Hector, who had so much to offer but was rejected by his own in his land. So goodbye, Brother Kim, we all mourn your passing. You were treated like all great Antiguans, ridiculed and castigated, shunned and emasculated. Your blood is on Antiguans. In praises of glory, your name was exalted, but in life you were demonized. Now your time is exhausted and your knowledge rejected, in that you are immortalized. So goodbye, Brother Tim, we all mourn your passing. You were treated like a leper in your land, without recognition,
We ignore your contribution and sing praises. Now you are gone.
The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often tarred with their bones, so let it be with Hector. I have no record of evil in the life of Tim Hector. Maybe mischief, but no evil. Let the catalogue of his goodness be interred with his bones.
Apollo, Sol, Vega, whose achievements were ignored, a journalist, an educator.
Jump up, oh, oh, with no behavior, we done decide. on earth.